You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, and welcome to this episode of Your Ultimate Life. I'm excited today. We're going to do something a little different today. I've got a guest with me today, Joy, who's been on here a time or two before. But we're going to do this completely differently. So instead of me running this interview or conversation, Joy's going to, and I'm going to turn it over to her. Joy, take it away.
Hey, thank you so much, and welcome, everyone. Today is a special day. Well, I mean, every day is a special day, but today is especially special. So today is June 6, 2023. Now, the graphic and the headline and the caption for this episode was 5 years later. Well, what does that mean? Five years from what? And what was this all about? 5 years ago today, June 6, 2018, Kellen went to the hospital. Now, we had just gotten back from a cruise around the Baltic. We went to wonderful places at a great time. As we were traveling home, Kellen got sick. Now, first it was like, maybe it's a flu, but yeah, it was getting pretty bad near the end. We flew home. He wasn't doing too well, and then spent a couple of days in bed. Now, the Friday morning that he woke up, June 6th, when he woke up, he did not feel well. So he went to what we have these Medi centers in Canada, just a little walk-in clinic, and they wouldn't let him in. They said, no, you better go to the hospital. And so he went to the hospital, and he was in the ER for a few hours. And I'm going to let Kellen then explain what happened. What happened to you, Kellen, after you're in the ER, they knew something was wrong. They couldn't pinpoint it. What did they do?
Well, the first thing that was funny for me was, you go to the ER and you might wait, I don't know, an hour or two, sometimes three, depending on how many people there are and how many ambulances come and everything else. And we didn't come in an ambulance, so we went in there and the triage nurse talks to you for a minute and asks you some questions or whatever. So we did that and then sat down. I was expecting to wait probably a couple hours because there were quite a few people in there. And then in 10 minutes, I was in a private room. Well, that was a shock because I didn't know they had private rooms in the ER. I'd only seen those curtain separators. Right. This is a room with a door. So they began doing all the tests that they do and that kind of thing. And it began to seem worse and worse and worse as the afternoon and then evening went on. And pretty quickly they said, well, of course, we're going to admit you. And they asked me all kinds of questions about where we'd been and the cruise we'd been on. And I repeated the story probably three or four times. And that night, it was a Friday, finally I said I had sent Joy home because we have cats and dogs and stuff, and I was in the hospital, so I told her to come back on Saturday to see what was going on.
Right.
And they came in and asked me three times, and this was really interesting. First time they came in and said, okay, yeah, we're going to move you. We're going to put you in the ICU. And I'm like, okay. Crap. I'd never been in the intensive care unit before. I'd only seen it in movies.
Odd for just going in like one time, I'm not feeling well. And it's like, ICU, what?
Exactly. And then they came back a little while later and said, okay, we're going to put you in biological isolation.
Uh-oh, that doesn't sound good.
Yeah, no. And it, double doors and, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And then they came back the final time and said, and this is before they moved me. But they said, so do we have permission to intubate you and do anything we need to preserve your life? Oops. And when they said that, I freaked out. In my mind, I thought, holy cow. And so I went into a meditative state, and I felt something interesting that I'd never felt before. I felt my body and spirit sort of unzipping, like a jacket unzipping. That's what it felt like.
That's pretty dramatic.
It was very dramatic.
And maybe traumatic as well.
Yeah. Well, I finished meditation and I sent Joy a text, and the text had three lines. By this point I could barely operate my phone. Yeah. I was crashing and I didn't know it. I was losing it. So I sent the three lines, and the first line said ICU, and the second line said isolation/intubation And the third line said, I may be dying.
I know. I didn't see that right away either. I saw that, you know, a few hours later, and I saw that and I thought, what? I freaked out. I didn't initially freak out, but I was panicky. I was like, oh, and then I tried texting you, calling you, but of course you were probably
gone.
Flatlined at that time. Yeah.
So I crash cart, you know, code blue, green, whatever it is. Yeah. And they took me to the ICU and did all the stuff. And I did flatline. They told us later that my heart had stopped. I had officially died. And, you know, somewhere in there, they were able to restart my heart. And then during that time of death, I had a near-death experience, which is quite dramatic. The first part of which was during that time I was flatlined. And the second and third part happened over the next couple of days. I ended up being in a coma for 17 days. And in that process, lost 35 pounds. I had lost all my strength. I couldn't walk, couldn't move.
Well, the picture shows that dramatic, you know, the day, I mean, and that was after you'd been feeding a feeding tube for a while. That was like, okay, this is when you got out of the hospital, but it was worse while you were, you know, declining in the hospital. If that's possible to be worse, but yeah, it was a pretty, you know, here's one thing that, I mean, you don't tell that story very often at this point, but when you were on the way home and we stopped off at my mom's place, because she didn't live that far from where we were living. I mean, she gasped when she saw you, right? Getting out of the car, she gasped. I thought that, I mean, we laugh about it now and we can kind of joke about it, but it wasn't funny at the time. It was pretty, you know, still deer in the headlights, oh no, kind of feeling. And I mean, and you too, I mean, you must have been pretty, I mean, yeah, you got out of the hospital. You know, there are a lot of things that we didn't know then that we know now. And, you know, this wasn't your first, you know, go around with this deadly bacteria, MRSA. This is, you know, you had another incident, but we were a lot smarter the second time around as to what to do. So with that near-death experience, a lot of people ask you about that. Like, do you find that people still want to talk about that? Are they still curious about it? You know, what's your experience with that 5 years later?
Well, I belong to a thing called Lunch Club, which is a networking app. It's an AI-powered networking app where you meet people around the world to just get to know. And during the pandemic, that was a lot of fun. But it's also businessy, but mostly just to meet people. Anyway, on my profile, I put, ask me what I learned by dying. And not all of them, but people almost always ask, okay, I'll bite. What's that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's pretty provocative, right? It's not just, you know, yeah. Ask me what I had for dinner last night. Ask me the lessons they learned from dying. What? Wait a minute. That's a showstopper.
It is a showstopper, and people want to know. And some people want to know details. Remember, we were in Phoenix a few weeks ago, and we went over to dinner to some friends, a very high-profile coach in the coaching world, personal development world, and we know them. And we were over to their house for dinner, and that's all they wanted to talk about.
Right. Yeah. Well, and it was from a perspective of, yeah, is this real? Is this, you know, is it as dramatic as, you know, you sometimes make it sound? Right? One of the interesting points is that when you finally got out of your coma and the nurses, they came to me, you know, they're sort of whispering, pulled me aside. It's like, you know, he's saying some really crazy stuff. And I thought, oh no. Well, I mean, there was some crazy stuff, you know, you thought people were coming out of the ceiling and all that kind of, you even had me trying to order some stuff on Amazon. And I thought, well, wait a minute. He was hallucinating. But what you weren't hallucinating, because it's just all the meds you were on, was one, you know, when you told the nurse that you had written three books in your head, three conversations with God while you were in this coma. Now, when the nurse said that to me, I thought, you know, he probably did write three books in his head while he was in a coma. And a matter of fact, you did write three books in your head while you were in a coma. And when you got out of your coma, you wrote them. Now, did that experience, when you think of, you know, a before an NDE and an after NDE, because that was a very dramatic event. You know, and keeping in mind these three books, it's hard to say, but how do you think things would have been, like, how dramatically did your mindset, you did your perspective on life, on death, how you see the world, the things that you want to do, how do you think that influenced your trajectory and the direction that you decided to go because of that experience? That might be hard to answer because, well, it's like, what happened?
Yeah. So I was already a coach. You know, you and I had been working on that for about 10 years. We started together in 2008, and this is 2018. So the first 4 or 5 years, we did other things. We were really focused on coaching the last 5 or 6 before this happened. So the direction of being a coach didn't change.
Right.
But I can tell you with that experience, like, people can say to me whatever they want about it being crazy and about it hallucinating and all that stuff. And there's a profound difference between the conversations I had with God and other hallucinations. One of them was light and powerful and clear and easy to remember, and the other was dark and confusing and everything else. So there's an absolute world's Grand Canyon difference between those two kinds of events.
Right.
So how did it change me? Well, it gave me a bulletproof certainty about what happens after we die. So I know that.
Yeah.
And as a consequence, the idea of death is interesting, and I'm happy to talk with people about it, but there is absolutely 0% uncertainty or fear related to that moment of transition. None whatsoever.
Right.
And so that is certainly not something I had before. Another thing is that I don't experience fear anymore, like I used to be afraid that this would fail or that would be bad or people would say this, and just like normal, right? And I
have, exactly,
I think more of my share of it than most because of the years of depression, but I'm not afraid of anything. And somebody asked me once when I said something about that, well, what do you mean you're not afraid? And I couldn't figure out how to explain it, but I looked at him and I said, can you tell me, given what I've been through, what is there on earth that I have, like, have to be afraid of? Like, we are afraid of, you know, going hungry or financial disaster or being ridiculed or like, none of that even means anything.
Right. Yeah. Well, and then when you hear, like, I had an experience of something that wasn't very big and traumatic, but for the other person, it was big, huge, and traumatic. And it's like, that ain't traumatic. That's like a small little piece of something that doesn't really matter in a, you know, a prosperous country, you know, bumping somebody's bumper. Like, that's nothing compared to this, you know, life altering, life changing experience. So, you know, we do still tend to sweat the small stuff. Why do we continue to do that when there are these other big things going on in the world? And there's so much good that people can do. Not just from your experience, but just in general as to why, you know, we focus on this little tiny piece of something.
I don't know why everybody does that.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, I can make some thoughts because I used to do that.
Right.
I used to be concerned about other people were thinking or what other people were doing and how it related to me, how unfair or yucky something was because this and that happened. I can tell you that I view now, 5 years on, that experience as a joyful blessing. And that is despite the fact that I did die and I lost 35 pounds and I couldn't walk and I looked like someone from a concentration camp and all of those things and I had to learn to do everything all over again. That's all true.
Yep.
And I don't care. And I wouldn't trade the certainty and the blessings that I have from that for anything. And that amount of pain and struggling and uncertainty and suffering to get what I got the good end of the bargain.
Yeah. Wow. You know, I think, you know, so when you did get out of the hospital, I know a number of, well, the doctors, the ER doctors said, you know, they pulled me aside saying, you know, it was touch and go there for a while. I mean, they were very concerned because there's like that whole team of doctors and nurses and specialists every morning in your room at a particular time. I made sure I tried to be there so I could listen in and sort of half understand what any of them were saying. Sometimes I'd ask questions and they'd, you know, dumb it down for me. But, you know, after that, though, boy, did I dive into doing some research on the subject, you know, joining Facebook group, all that. But, you know, I think one of the things, too, though, is after something like that, you know, I mean, I was so grateful that you came out of it intact. And it was like, whew. But that wasn't the end of it, though. That's the thing. You know, it wasn't the end. That was just, I mean, that's a big part. That was part one of your experience with this deadly bacteria. And, you know, we're still trying to figure out how in the heck you got it, because it's hard to get. This isn't an easy thing that you get a necrotizing MRSA in both lungs. That's hard to do, but it is what it is. So this was only part one. What about part two? You know, you had an experience a couple months later.
Yeah, there was an interesting in that lunch club thing I was talking about earlier. I met a couple, three weeks ago, a nurse, and she asked about it, of course, and we talked about it, and she wanted details, so I told a lot more detailed version than I did. And anybody that's watching this, if you want to read the details, it's in a book called Meeting God at the Door, because the conversations took place at a door. So Meeting God at the Door, Conversations, Choices, and Commitments of a Near-Death Experience. Anyway, she asked about what I had and everything else, and I told her that it was this necrotizing MRSA in my bloodstream and in both lungs.
Right.
And she just shook her head and said, "You're dead. I mean, you're done. That's it." When I told her, you know, and I said, "Well, the doctor said, you know, 10-day mortality rate's 100%. She said, "Of course it is." So it was completely like that.
Well, and the other thing as well is that, you know, the nurse, I mean, this is just day one in that month-long, you know, experience in the hospital. You know, and she said to me, that an ICU nurse, that if it wasn't for your strong immune system going in, you would not have survived that night. Because this was like the next day. You know, you walk into this room, it's like, Kellen, you're hooked up to every machine. No one, it's just like, it was surreal. But, you know, knowing that, wow, that strengthened your immune system, you know, but, you know, what heals you and what, you know, kills the bacteria in your body also does a lot of damage to your gut biome and what's going on with your immune system, a lot of it, which happens in the gut. So, you know, 5 years on, what sort of things are you, well, we'll get back to the piece about what happened a few months later, but 5 years on though, where are you? Your lungs and your health and your immune system. We know that took a huge hit, but that was from the other experience in December.
Well, I asked the doctor, I said, you know, my lungs were ruined. I mean, the guy said he'd never seen a case of pneumonia like this. My lungs were destroyed. And I did a lot of martial arts and skiing and all this kind of stuff, good shape and everything. And so I was wondering, and I also sang, and I was thinking, you know, my lungs are now destroyed. So I asked him as we left, I said, "So how long will it take for me to get my lungs back?" And he shook his head and he said, "2 years to never."
Never, yeah.
And heavy on the never. So I've been working all this time to get my lung capacity back, and I still have some, you know, corticosteroid inhalers and stuff, and may forever, but I can be just grateful beyond measure that I'm probably at 75 or 80%. I'm back singing. I've recorded some more music and stuff like that. So that's the voice. And the immune system, you know, I don't know if that ever or many years to get all fixed. I know that I've been a little more prone to illness since that time than I had earlier in my life. And I know that even a cold seems to be much harder on me than it used to be. But I'm grateful for all of it because, like I said a minute ago, this is a blessing. It strengthened my commitment to coaching. It exponentially increased my certainty about the capability. I mean, this program is Your Ultimate Life, and it's about creating a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. And it's made me know more than anything, you can have anything you want and you can create it. Yep. And why we get fussed around bumped bumpers and all the rest of it is a choice.
Right? Yeah.
And you can unchoose that anytime you want.
Well, I just want to just touch on something for our listeners about the immune system. And, you know, one of the important things about, you know, okay, you had a super strong immune system going in. I mean, you didn't catch anything ever for any reason. You should have, but you didn't. Very healthy, no major illnesses, none of that kind of stuff. And then after this, it's like kind of one thing after another on some level of things. But I read something interesting, you know, when you were on, so you were on a heavy, well, you were on several linezolid. I'm going to butcher the name of that drug. Somebody out there will say, that's not how you say it. And then vancomycin, which is known as the drug of last resort, really was discovered, formulated, created around the same time that we saw the MRSA bacteria appear, which is like early 1960s. So long time ago, but not that long time ago. I read somewhere in one of the, you know, I don't know, National Institute of Health or some other large organization that does these kinds of studies, said that for every round of antibiotics that you take, now their criteria for a round of antibiotics was a male, 4 days of antibiotics screwed up your immune system for 6 months. Now, you didn't believe me when I gave you that statistic a couple of years ago, but when you see a doctor regularly to check on your lungs and such, your doctor kind of said, yeah, it kind of does. Did you find that, you know, I mean, totally gobsmacking, shocking, or was it sort of, no, that can't possibly be true. Sure, well, you can fix those kinds of things.
I didn't want it to be true, because if you take that, I mean, in a coma, in intravenous antibiotics, to give an idea, they had so many needles in me. They had the square wood block that they had attached to my wrist so that the needles could be that, and then they would go into me. And it got so bad that all my veins collapsed, and they had to take the wood block off and start doing things in other places.
Right? Yeah.
So, that was a month. Traumatic.
Yep.
And so, you know, 4 days, that's like 7 or 8 rounds of antibiotics. Yeah. And then there were, so 7 or 8 6-month periods, that's 4 years. And then there was another thing, the one we'll talk about that happened in December 2018. It was another 6, 7, 8 weeks. And so that's 32, 8 times 7 is 56. So it's another 14, 6 months, 7 years. So just from those two things, not counting small doses of antibiotics.
Exactly.
Years. That is 11 years to get the immune system back up to where it was, which used to be really good.
Yep.
So I didn't want it to be true, but I get it.
Well, and there's a lot of things to do, especially things like adding probiotics, adding prebiotics, you know, having fermented foods as a part of your diet. Maybe you like kombuchas or kefirs. Make your own. They're really healthy. They're easy to make. Sauerkrauts, kimchi. There's a lot of wonderful fermented foods that, you know, maybe they weren't your favorites before, but, you know, it's a healthy choice to help at least strengthen your immune system. So now let's go back and talk about December 2018. The setup is this. Okay, July, you get out of the hospital, you convalesce for a little while, you start doing your coaching calls again, and then you get invited to a couple of in-person speaking events. I think Philadelphia was one. Where was the other one? Phoenix,
LA.
So that was pretty much September, November, pretty much for 2018. So you're thinking, hey, I'm done. I'm out of the hospital. Yeah, I don't feel all that great. And, you know, your doctor said, well, this was afterwards, but we'll get to that. So then September, October, November, things are going well. You're speaking, you're going to different events. What happens?
Well, at the end of last part of November, I started getting pain in my back, which had nothing to do with lungs. And I was still by no means, even when I was going to these speaking events, I still looked pretty rough, but I was
holding your book up, you know,
newly
minted, meeting God at the door. It's like, I'm living proof. Yep.
Right. So anyway, toward the end of November, I started getting pains, and I just kept trying to exercise through it. So I would walk further and do squats and things, trying to get my back fixed. And on December 5th, 2018, I woke up and I was paralyzed from the waist down. Wow. I tried to get out of bed and I fell on my face on the floor.
Yeah.
And I couldn't understand what was going on because like nothing like that had ever even sort of happened. So then I got up on my hands and, or tried to get up on my hands and knees, and I was back on my face. And the only direction of motion that was available was down.
And you know, interestingly, wasn't that also a Friday? Was that all?
I don't remember.
Several months early. Well, and here's the funny thing. Okay, not that I'm into this numbers thing or anything like that, but when we flew back from Europe on a Tuesday, you went into the hospital on Friday. This time around in December, you started to feel sick around Tuesday, Wednesday. You thought you were coming down with a cold, maybe a flu, started to have a fever. Friday, I'm thinking it's a Friday. I'm going to look it up. I'm going to see if it's a Friday.
Anyway, so
later, Friday.
Yeah, sorry, I woke up paralyzed from the waist down, and I was I was in denial.
Oh,
I didn't want it to be true, and I needed to go downstairs and do my coaching calls. And so I'm crawling across the floor with the army crawl on your arms and trying to get down the stairs, and I got through one of the dog gates, and then I knocked the other one down, and it was a big project. And so finally I realized, this isn't going to happen. So I crawled across the floor in the living room, and Joy helped me up on the couch, and she called 911, and I'm laying there, and the paramedics came.
You said, we don't need, I'm sure I can make it to the car. It's like, I don't think so. There's something going on here. We're calling an ambulance. Even they struggled to, get you out the door.
Anyway, so they finally came, and paramedics loaded me up and put me in the car. And it turns out, and I had another high-powered spiritual experience in the back of the ambulance on the way. But what turned out is that the MRSA that was supposed to be gone hadn't been eradicated from my system. Now, there's a little story here. The particular bug that I had was so aggressive and so nasty that at one point when I was all, wired up, they couldn't get the bacteria count to go down. And what turned out is that the tube they had in my neck, the bacteria had begun to attack the tube.
I know.
And grow in the tube. So they had to take that one out and put it in the other side.
Yeah, that's scary.
So anyway, what happened is it ended up having relocated in my spine.
Right.
At between C2 and T1 vertebrae, which is way up at the top. It's about a 4-inch thing, and it had formed an abscess and had begun to calcify and put pressure on my spinal column, which is why I was paralyzed. So, but we didn't know that, of course. We got to the hospital, and they came in, and they looked at the history only 4 months before, and there were 5 months before, and it's like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
So immediately it was not like, who are you? It's like, oh, no. So they did an MRI and everything. And by the time they got that done, they called the spinal surgeon on call, who happened to be one of the best. I mean, there's no accidents, but happened to be one of the best in Canada. And he took one look at the MRI and he said, prep that guy for the operating room. So I never went to a room. I went from the emergency room
to the OR.
To the operating room.
Exactly.
For them to do emergency surgery to get that out of there. And they did a spinal laminectomy, which is some fancy name for scraping all that crap out of the spinal cavity.
Right.
And to try to get me to be able to walk again and have function in the lower body. So then it worked and everything was fine. And that was another miraculous thing. That doctor told me something later. I'll tell you in a minute. But when we left, I had to have a bag, a pump, a PICC line, personal internal catheter. And they stick it in your right arm and in your veins and it drips in your heart. And they do that because the antibiotics that they're giving you are so grumpy that they would collapse all your veins. So it has to go where there's the maximum blood flow, which is in the vein that drops into your heart. So I wore that and a pump for 6 weeks.
Right.
And again, I was, for 6 weeks, I was on the, what they call the antibiotic of last resort.
Last resort, vancomycin.
And that's what I had to carry around for 6 weeks plus the 2 weeks or 10 days anyway, I was in the hospital. So That, it was funny. Here's a funny thing. We had to go to the outpatient pharmacy after they let us out. We got out the 14th, so 10 days later.
And you spent your birthday in the hospital, too.
I did.
I know. My 10th was my birthday. I know, or a cake or something. Yeah, we celebrated.
We did celebrate. So I went to get my first bag at the outpatient pharmacy across the street. Yeah. And I went in there to say, you know, well, I'm here to get some medication. I have a pump and whatever. And I started to say my name. I said, well, I'm Kat. And I got my name partway said, and the nurse looked up at me and said, oh, we know who you are.
Yeah. Sort of, and like, said, one word name, you know, Cher, Kellen, just, you know.
I said, oh, well, we know who you are.
Yeah,
and it turns out that the stuff that I had been talking about when I was supposedly incoherent in June had been all over the hospital and everybody knew. And here I was back. And so they knew who I was. And that was quite interesting because she wanted to know some stuff.
That's,
so
that's right. She did. That one lady. I remember that now. Yeah. Yeah, she did. She wanted to know about that experience, the near death. And yeah, it was, well, it was, you know, pretty profound for them, too. Because, you, so, you know.
It wasn't just the ravings of a lunatic. Yeah, it wasn't just the ravings of a lunatic. Whatever. Some of them were like very serious. You know, this is something, and they wanted to know. And so I got to ask a lot of questions about that.
Well, okay, so let's leave that for a minute. And, you know, we're looking at today now. And, you know, you've had this journey over 5 years, and people still like to talk about it, or, you know, the near death. Why do you think that the near death experience part is so popular? I mean, you know, you get asked about it a lot. Like, I think when we were looking at podcasts, because you know, you have a podcast with the same name, Your Ultimate Life. And when we're, you know, when our podcast manager was looking for, appointments or places for you to be a guest, the NDE was like the most popular topic. Why do you think that is?
Because people are scared of dying.
Right.
People are terrified of it, and people want to know what's going on. And a lot of people, a lot of those NDEs, people come back and start trying to prophesy about this, that, and the other. And
right.
I don't have any of that to say. You know, I did have those conversations. They were profound. I recorded the conversations in the book. But I'm not trying to run around and create celebrity from it. What I am trying to create from it is a certainty and encouragement for people to understand their divine heritage, like you were created on purpose. You have the tools to create your ultimate life. And yeah, I don't know why, but I had some pretty remarkable experiences that, and here's the key, they taught me stuff, but they didn't do anything for me. So at the end of those things, I had to do the recovery.
Right,
I had to do the physical work.
Yeah.
I had to decide whether or not I was going to understand, accept, and implement the things that I learned in those places.
Yeah.
And it takes the same work. Like, there's no easy button.
No.
And I think what people want when they ask that is they want assurance. They want to know. Some people are just curious. They want to know, ooh, weird stuff.
Voyeurs, I guess, huh?
Yeah, but I think most of them, at least the impression that I get and try to leave, is that it's not about me having an experience. It's about sharing truth about your opportunity and possibility.
Wow. Yeah, and that in itself is pretty profound, because I think, you know, I in some of these groups or wherever or other podcasts you're on, and the people who listen to them, I think it gets weeded out the people who are just in there for the sort of the, you know, dog and pony show. That most people who are in there, I mean, it's a pretty hardcore group, and they're pretty committed to their cause, and they're committed to that cause of spreading the message, like you had said too. But I think you can also get stuck in that, because you are not a one-trick pony. But you also have a friend, and she's been on LA Talk Radio before, Sandra Champlain. Now, she wrote a book called We Don't Die. And she, I think, was very interested in your near-death experience. Is that correct?
Well, she was very interested. Her journey with this whole thing started with her father.
Right.
Because they had a nice family and everything. And when her father got sick and passed away, like happens often, there was a lot of infighting and arguing, and it destroyed the family relationships. And she had been interested in understanding if and what the afterlife looked like, and she considered herself a hardcore skeptic. But the more she discovered and the more research she did, and as much legit research as you can do, and she started that right before her father died, and then continued it afterwards, and she's had enough experience and has gathered a huge worldwide following just around the idea that we actually don't. The book is we don't die, but what she means is we don't cease to be. There is an afterlife. Yeah. There is a continuing existence. And I certainly know that. And she's interviewed many people on her show, but she was, because we'd met some 10 years ago, she didn't know when we re-met here a year ago that I'd had this happen because we hadn't stayed connected. And so she was absolutely floored that it had happened to me, and she absolutely wanted to know every detail about it and so forth in terms of what she knew and what she had, you know, discovered in her own processes and so forth. So she was very interested, not from the point of view of a voyeur or just finding out weird things, but from the point of view of assuring people two things. One, no, you don't cease to exist. And two, it is so important and worth it to live your life all in now. Yeah. Don't wait. Don't put it off. Yep. Create everything. You have every opportunity to create a business, purpose, prosperity, relationships to make the difference you want. And she's very involved in that. And it was fun to talk to her after some years of not.
Right.
On her show.
Yeah. So do you find that, okay, so now we are 5 years later and we're talking, you know, you talk about purpose, prosperity, and joy and leaving a legacy. Does that sound too like, that's for somebody else, that's too out there? You know, that's our dog in the background, Cooper. He's very excited as well. Do you find that people then are confused as to what, we're just going to shift to business now for, a few minutes here. So 5 years later, purpose, prosperity, and joy. Is that too hard of a concept for a lot of people? Or the people, you know, if you don't know what you don't know, do we need to make it more simple for people? Or are people just really confused? They lack the clarity. They lack the confidence. And then in turn, they lack the cash to do what they want to do, whether it's to live their ultimate life, whatever version that is, or just, you know, leave a legacy, get moving with things instead of staying stuck where they are.
Well, I use the word purpose, prosperity, and joy, and I do it on purpose. Purpose is a driving passion. Some people want to make a difference. Some people want to end illiteracy. Some people want to work on clean water. Some people want to save the whales or the animals or whatever.
Yeah.
So people can claim a purpose. The missing piece is that most folks think that when they claim a purpose, they have to relegate themselves to the pile of do-gooders, and they can't somehow they better have a good job to take care of things, because they don't believe that a purpose-driven life can result in a purpose-driven business that makes good money. And so sometimes we use the word clarity, confidence, and cash instead of purpose, prosperity, and joy, because here's what I know. There are three things. And if you do these three things, you can create the most impact in the world, do the most good, you can have the most fun, and you can make the most money. So why would you not do the thing that has the biggest impact, is the most fun, and makes the most money?
Well, I mean, I'd want to do those things.
All right. So I'll tell you what the three things are.
Yeah.
And when I say this, people they get afraid. And this is where that fear comes in.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe the fear of not death, but, you know, here are the three things. You have a set of natural talents. Sometimes I call them divine gifts. You have a set. Okay. You also have a set of learned skills. Maybe you went to school and you're an architect. Maybe you write books. Maybe you sing. Maybe you deliver pizza. I don't know. You have a set of learned skills and you have a set of natural talents. That's true for everyone. The third thing that's true for everyone is that you have a life experience journey. You have a set of unique events that have shaped you into who you are.
Right.
If you combine the unique set of life journey events that have shaped you into who you are with your learned skills and your natural talents, you have a totally unique voice, a totally unique set of things to share and to give and to teach. And you can absolutely make the most money, have the most fun, and have the biggest impact from those three things and in no other way. That is the pinnacle of all that. And what stops people is they get afraid. What if nobody cares? What if I this? What if I look stupid? What if I fail? And all that collection of gobbledygook is the reason people don't take the three things that they all have and have more fun, make more money, and create more impact.
Wow. Okay, so I have a lot of interest. And let's say somebody like me or another person, we like to do a lot of things. Like, how do we then, you know, take apart each of those three components and then, you know, jumble it up? Or I don't know if jumble is exactly the word to use. But then how do we take each of these three components, put it together, and voila, it's my perfect thing. Like, how do I go about starting that and deciding that? Do I make a list? Do I don't know. What do I do? What would you do?
Well, this is what I teach, and this is what I help people do. First of all, what do you want to have the outcome to be? Like, often that's a nebulous question. I ask people, what do you want? And they say, I want to help people. They say that all the time. I want to help people. So I'm going to assume they're going to tell the truth. They have this feeling, because we're all divine beings. We are best when we love and serve each other. We feel the best. We're having the most fun. We feel the best about each other. Okay. Then my next question is, go ahead. What?
No, go on. No, because I'm going to interject there, because it's like when you hear that, when you say, well, I want to help people. Why aren't you helping people? You can go across. You can go outside right now and help somebody across the street. You know, you can shovel somebody snow if you live somewhere where there's snow. So is that really a valid thing, or is there something else? It's not that they just want to help people, but they want to make cash too.
They want to have it be a big, meaningful help.
Right.
So they don't think about, if I mow my neighbor's lawn, that's a nice do-gooder thing. But most people are thinking, I want to help in a profound, meaningful way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then my question is always, what do you want to do? Because I can give you a list of things that you could do. There's no end of things that need done.
Absolutely.
But, I don't want to do that. What do you want to do? Don't tell me don'ts.
You're starting with the end in mind then, aren't you? Like, the result, and then what do you
have to do? If you want to help people in your ideal day, three years from now, you've built yourself a business, you're making good money, who is paying you, and for what? No, but that's part of the discussion. So you have to be willing to do the work. I don't know. Well, then you're never going to get there. If you're not willing to say, 3 years from now, I want to get up and I want my days spent doing what? Sometimes people say, I want to go talk. I want to speak. Okay. To what audiences about what?
It's not very sexy, though, is it, for a lot of people? Then, you know, that sounds like that's a 3-year plan. Well, you know, it is a 3-year plan. But, I mean, everybody has, you have to have a plan. You really do. Because you're just going to wake up and it's like, I don't know where I'm going today, but I want people to pay me to do it. It's not going to happen.
It isn't going to happen. And light is diffuse and it lights up a whole room. If you focus and concentrate the light, you can start a fire. If you concentrate it even more in a laser, you can burn through steel. So if you want to live your life unfocused and scattered, you're free to do that. And you can live putting light in lots of places.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But you're not going to create a huge impact, and you're not going to create a boatload of cash, because for those things, you need to have laser focus.
Yeah,
you can't do everything and have it all whatever.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, Kellen, you speak to a lot of people. You know, your calendar's full with speaking to people. And then on social media, you get tons of requests for people to talk to you. And you know, I mean, you know, you only have a limited time, but a lot of people, they'll say, and I've heard people say this, well, I'll do anything. I'll do anything. Do you think that's true? Are they? I mean, and you've had a lot of people go through your programs. You have a 90-day program that you run, and then month to month after that, people say, okay, you know what? 90 days, I'm going to have. Now, how many of those people, some do, some don't, right? What is the missing ingredient for those that don't, that choose not to do it? They say they want it, but they don't do it. Why?
Well, I have a conversation. Often I'll start with that conversation. What do you want to do? And it's not a trick thing. What do you want to be doing? When do you want to have it working? You want to have a business that's producing how much money? Doing what? Who's paying you? What are you providing? You know, those are good questions. Right. And then we say, okay, so in 6 months from now or a year from now, you want to be here. You right. want to have this done. All right. So here are the first steps you could take. And I'll start listing things. Start this, do this. Start this, da-da-da, stop doing this, create some time for this. And then very often people will say, oh, well, I didn't know it meant that. And
right.
so
yeah.
what they're work. Saying is, I don't want to do the work. I yeah. want to buy the magic sauce that yeah. I can find only on aisle 13 and a half in yeah. Safeway.
That's
that
a
I
disease.
Can pour on my existing life yep. and get some new yep. outcome. And if that's what you're thinking, I'm not the right person to talk to. I'm about getting organized, getting clear about what you want. I don't want to tell you, but then doing stuff.
Yep. So we have a few minutes left. Now, I want you to talk about something that you're created. A lot of people, they don't have purpose, prosperity, and joy is like too much up here for people. It's too out there. But you're working on something about clarity, confidence, cash. Tell us about that.
So in the 19th of June, which is, a couple weeks from yeah. yesterday, we're going to have a five-day Clarity Confidence and Cash Accelerator Challenge. Right. And it's going to be about helping the people that come focus on getting clarity. What do you really want to do bad enough to create time and focus in your life to do it? What is that?
Yep.
And yes, of course, it's with the idea of making money and making an impact.
Absolutely.
Of course it is.
Yep.
So it's clarity. And then the second piece is confidence, because yep. it's easy to create the list. The path to creating a product or writing a book or doing those things yep. is well known. People don't take the steps because they're afraid and they don't know how to do this and they're afraid of judgment and ridicule. So clarity, confidence, and cash, clarity about what you're doing. Confidence to take the steps that you need to get it done, and then your roadmap to take those decisions into cash.
Yep.
This is not a mystery. The path is known. What's missing for most people is, are they willing to do the work, to get the clarity, to create the confidence, and then turn that into your path to cash? So June 19th. Clarity, Confidence, and Cash, five-day accelerator challenge. That's a near-term thing that we're doing, and I'm pretty excited about it.
And having 5 days of Kellen, like an hour a day, you know how much, I mean, I know how much your private coaching costs, and your clients, they pay a lot of money. So for 5 days, an hour a day, to experience this challenge, and not only that, not just experience the challenge, but get the work done for themselves. Like an hour a day, you'd be surprised. And yeah, we'll have some homework, but you'd be surprised at what you can accomplish putting pen to paper and getting it done. Now, if you want to join that challenge, there is a charge, $17. And why do we charge? Because if you don't have any skin in the game, you won't show up. You'll say you'll watch the replay. We don't need your $17 that much. So if you want to get in there, UltimateLifeChallenge.com. UltimateLifeChallenge.com. You get the clarity, the confidence, and then a plan to execute so that you can get the cash to create your ultimate life. Kellen, do you have any final closing words? I'll let you close it. Take it away. And thank you so much for sharing your story and sharing all your gifts and talents with us.
Well, thank you. When you ask about doing a 5 years on thing, I thought that was interesting. And yeah. it did give me a chance to reflect on that stuff. So every single person watching this right now has a unique story. You have unique natural talents. You have learned skills. You can finish your life settling for what's easy and obvious, or you can make a choice right here, right now, to move forward and capitalize on those unique gifts, on the unique opportunities that you have. And if you want to, this is your invitation. This is your opportunity to change your life. Join the challenge. We'd love to have you. Regardless, stop settling for mediocrity, because you have the opportunity every day to take control of your life and create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.